Thought I'd talk a little bit about the master-disciple relationship, which surprised me. That's what came up. That's what came up to talk about. So, see what comes out. I think all of you know that Zen is very strong in its emphasis on the master-disciple relationship. The very words, in a way, can get... The very words can perhaps sometimes obscure what is meant by that. So for a moment, I'm going to try to almost like peel back the words and talk about it. The words can obscure the meaning often because we tend to bring so much of our own view of things, sometimes our own expectations, sometimes our own opinions, sometimes our own emotions to the subject. But what the master-disciple relationship is about isn't about any of that. It's not about any of that. It's about something else entirely. It's not about something personal for either master or disciple. So let's kind of peel the words away for a second, or try to do so. Challenging sometimes to do that, but let's just throw away the words master and disciple for a moment and see if there's something that we can talk about that doesn't even use those words for a moment. Let's just, for a moment, just talk about faith. River Master really emphasized, and it's really my experience, this is true, that there is in every person a little seed of faith that comes directly from your Buddha nature. That's a manifestation of your Buddha nature that's always accessible to you. A little seed of faith. The word faith can even get in the way. So let's just say a little seed of upward lookingness that everyone has, that is always accessible. That no matter how difficult, how dark, how even horrendous the circumstances can be, everyone has the capacity to choose to look up spiritually. Another way to put it, to choose not to despair. To choose not to despair. To choose to look up spiritually. Everyone has that capacity, and it cannot be taken from you by anyone or anything. No circumstances can take it from you. Nothing horrendous that's happened in the past or that might happen in the future can take it from you. It's direct from Buddha nature. It can't be taken away. Everyone has it. And the weight of karma can be such that we can blind ourselves to our own capacity to look up. And we can sometimes be swept away by fear, by despair. And while we are swept away by it, it's like it doesn't exist, that capacity to look up. Where is it? And yet it's always there. are born into this realm of existence due to causes and conditions from the past. And we're, as it were, we're kind of born into this roiling sea of experience. And a part of this experience is the feelings, or are the feelings that we associate with suffering. And in the midst of that, you know, kind of drifting and in this sea of stuff, important part of which is our feeling, we can sometimes think we're drowning in that intensity of stuff, some of which sometimes is despair. In the midst of that swirling, tumultuous sea, sometimes we're brought together with someone else who's also in the midst of that sea, who is looking up, and who knows about that capacity to look up in themselves, and they know about it in others. It's a little bit like particles in a kind of a chemical soup that, due to their complementary electrical charges, pull together at some point, or brought together. When all conditions are right, they come together. When the temperature of this stuff is right, when there's the right concentration, etc., they come together and form a new unity. Spiritually, that's what happens when someone finds their master. That inherent capacity that you have to look up, that sometimes you know how to exercise and sometimes you don't, and with some of us, maybe it was initially a lot more of the don'ts than the do's. A lot more struggling in the soup of despair than knowing how to look up and exercising it. When all conditions ripen, we're brought together with someone who knows how to do it, and who trusts our capacity to do it, and who won't believe when we convince ourselves that we can't do it, that we can't do it. I'll repeat that because that's really important. Who won't believe when we convince ourselves that we can't do it, who won't believe that we can't do it. No matter how convincing our arguments are that we give to ourselves or to others, they won't believe it. When this comes together, no timing's right, and beings are brought together in this way, that's the beginning of a master-disciple relationship. That's what the inherent reality is that we express in those words. That's what the spiritual reality is that we express in those words. Everything that goes by the name of master-disciple relationship is not necessarily a true master-disciple relationship. And sometimes something that doesn't go by that name actually is. It's very important for people, when we're able to to recognize it, to recognize the fact that words are not the same as the things that they point to. And this is as true in the spiritual life as anywhere else. And far more important to recognize this in the spiritual life than anywhere else. The words words are not the reality that they're pointing to. It's not the words that matter, it's the reality that matters. This coming together, like I'm describing, doesn't just happen with monks, it happens with lay people too. And that's because it doesn't just happen between monks, it also happens between lay people and monks. You know, and what is the reason for that? Well, it's the same reason. Because the fundamental spiritual things we're talking about aren't occurring at the level of the distinctions, the far fine distinctions, say, between monk and layperson. They're at the level of the real spiritual need that we have and what it is that helps that need. So this also helps us understand why this relationship is so inexpressibly precious when we're in our more enlightened state. We recognize this. When we're in our more kicky, unenlightened state, we may not recognize it so clearly. But this does help explain why it's so inexpressibly precious. And the real reason for that is, very simply, that this relationship is not in the control or created by either party. This relationship is a manifestation of cosmic compassion and is entirely in the charge of the eternal, the Buddha nature itself, not in human control and charge. That does not mean to say that both human beings involved do not make choices that have consequences. Of course they do, and they're important choices, and important consequences. And the fundamental reality of this relationship, the fact that there is this coming together when all conditions ripen, and it's the right time, there is this coming together. That's not something that you or I are in charge of. That just is. So the way I view it is, these people are given to one another by the eternal for their mutual benefit and for the benefit of all beings. And this vehicle is created not by man and by human institutions, it is created by the eternal. And it is fundamental to the truly contemplative and deeply spiritual life. It just is. There are not there are relatively few instances of deeply enlightened people just floating around the world without a master. The more naturally arising, more common situation is for people to be brought together the right timing with their master, perhaps with a series of teachers culminating in their true master, true and final human master. Then what, after this coming together, then what happens subsequently, although the course of it is influenced in many ways by the choices of the two human beings concerned, still there's the deeper aspect is still entirely in the hands of the eternal. And that is especially notable in what the people mean for one another. the meaning that the people have for one another in this relationship. Rumi Master used to express the meaning of the master for the disciple in a wonderful way. She said, the master is not the eternal. The master is not the Buddha nature. The master is not God. And the master represents the eternal for the disciple. The master represents the Buddha nature for the disciple. Represents. That's not something the master does by an act of will. It has nothing to do with the master as a person. That is the use to which the eternal puts the master in the life of the disciple. And that meaning is simply not subject to any human being's personal will. It has nothing personal within it. The master does not have to be an extraordinary human being with wonderful abilities and great wisdom and all of that in order for this to be the case. You don't have to be some kind of special person. You don't have to be some notably spiritual person. How can it be? The master just has to be someone who knows how to look up and who believes that other people can do the same. And the disciple just has to be someone who has the capacity to look up, who has bumped into this person and formed this bond. Neither one of them has to be Superman, a superwoman. Just ordinary human beings, like other ordinary human beings, doing the best they can. Another thing that I should say is that this coming together like this, even if there's the coming together, it's still a voluntary act to enter into that relationship. And that's why the formal relationship is very helpful. When the timing's right, and one finds one's true master, at some point most people, not everyone, by the way, it's a big world out there, but most people at some point wish to formalize that relationship by saying, may I be your disciple? And when that relationship is formalized, the formalizing of it happens because there is a conscious choice that people make, and that the relationship is actually not forced upon people. You see, it's not forced upon you. The Eternal's in charge of it, and the Eternal doesn't force it. Sometimes a master might give assent to the formal aspect of it, and it turns out that nonetheless there was not a true master-disciple relationship. Sometimes a disciple, someone who has a sometimes someone will have a longing to be a disciple and will ask, and might receive a yes or a no or a wait from a master, and yet not, even though they ask, they're not really ready for discipleship. Everything hasn't yet matured to the point where that can really happen at the basic level we're talking about. So the formal side exists is no guarantee of anything. You see, it's not an answer to some deep need, the formal side of things. is not an answer to a deep need. Not in itself. There has to be a genuine coming together when all conditions ripen, when there is a genuine readiness on both sides. There's another saying that Reverend Master used to say. I think some of these sayings are just kind of things she learned in the Far East. But I just heard them from her. So like most of what I learned of Buddhism, I just heard it from my master. You know, and so I don't know where it came from. But she'd say sometimes when the disciple is ready, the master appears. But I would add to that, as someone who has been and still am, you know, a disciple, and my master's dead, but I'm still just as much a disciple as I ever was. And now I'm also a master myself with disciples, but I would just say when the master is ready, the disciple appears. Works both ways, equally. Just being named a master by my master didn't mean that at that point I was ready to have disciples myself. I was not. A long ways from it at that point. You see. What we do doesn't make this happen. You know, what we plan out, or you know, we don't make it happen. It happens when it's ready to happen. And when it does, it's an incredibly precious thing. The most precious thing in human life, I think. Another thing that you know, should be clear from the way I'm talking about this is that the fact that one person has learned to look up. It's better to put it in terms of is learning to look up, because we're always learning about that. You know, let's say that one person maybe has a little more experience in looking up than another person. But the fact that one person has more experience in it than another, and therefore believes in it more than another, does not mean that there's some kind of magic that they're going to be able to impart that to someone else. There's no magic in the master-disciple relationship. Everyone's got to learn it through their own experience, by trying to do it. And we call that trying to do it, we call that meditation in our tradition, by the way. I don't know if it sounds like I've been describing meditation. But when your heart is sinking, when your heart is sinking and something in you says, I must sit still through this and not indulge it, and not go down a road of darkness. That's meditation. Whether you know it or not, that's looking up. Because you may feel lousy, it may not feel like looking up. Looking up doesn't have a particular feel to it. Looking up is not the same as feeling happy. It's certainly not the same as appearing to be happy. I've quoted many times where a master said to me in private, not long before she died, Koshin, we don't need happiness, we know ecstasy. Boy, she was right. No. This is not the pursuit of happiness. Looking up is just something you choose. because it's built into your instinct. You know what it is. You know how to do it. It's just that we convince ourselves we don't. We sit still long enough, eventually it'll dawn on us, actually we do. You know, just kind of quieting everything down, and then, oh, well, I can. See? So there's no magic in it. And yet, it's just the nature of things that the relationship helps both people do it. Not just the disciple, it helps the master do it too. The relationship helps both people do it. You also can see from the way I've talked about it that the way I talk about it abstracts from all the soap opera of human relationships. And that's very important. That you cannot analyze this relationship, which is the fundamental, deepest Sangha relationship. You cannot analyze it in terms of human emotionalism and opinions and psychology and all this stuff. You can't analyze it in those terms. It won't reduce to anything. It will not reduce to anything. It is what it is. An irreducible fact. It won't reduce. It won't be made into something less, is another way to put it, than what it is. When it's functioning at its deepest level, unhindered at its deepest level, it's amazing. It's magnificent. And it transcends both human beings completely. That thing about representing the eternal, never underestimate what that means. The master represents the eternal for the disciple. That's why I can say, you know, my master's been dead for years now, and I'm still her disciple, and she's still not dead for me. And my life, my spiritual life, is to the best of my ability to be true to beyond, more than my master's teaching, to be true to what she represents for me. That's nothing less than my own Buddha nature. And she will always represent that for me. Again, not because she's a special person, although she's a magnificent human being, but it goes beyond that. It's just beyond more and less, greater and smaller, wiser and foolisher, and all those things. It goes beyond all those things. It transcends all the opposites. It's not what people make of it, it's what the eternal makes of it. That makes it what it is. Siddha Buddha, Siddha Dharma, Siddha Sangha.